I only have one Eopi.
Not for long, Callie said, snickering. Annalene scooted over and felt Rue's abdomen.
How long have you had her?
Ben shuffled.
I don't recall. I bought her some time ago.
His brow furrowed.
You don't think this, happened at the Oasis, do you?
Callie burst out laughing. Annalene smiled too, but looked down so as not to embarrass Ben any further.
Eopi gestation times are a bit longer than that. It looks like you got two for the price of one on that purchase. One cannot cast blame in matters of love, Ben said.
Or whatever. He cracked a smile in spite of himself and knelt. He rubbed the animal's face.
You've been keeping secrets, my little friend.
Congratulations, Grandpa, Annalene said. With Callie's help, Annalene removed the harness from Rue's back. Freed, the animal stood up and resumed chomping on the weed. Annalene looked at the cooling unit. Pretty beat up, she said.
It's seen use, Ben said.
In the great hyperspace war, maybe. Annalene shook her head.
I've never seen a coolant pump this old.
Ben cleared his throat.
Yes, well, I was hoping they've seen one at the repair shop in Bastien.
He gestured to the east.
You're going to another store?
Callie said, eyes filling with dismay.
People are like that, sweetie,
Annalene said. Give them a discount once and they'll never respect you again. A snarky voice bellowed from inside the darkened window of the light van.
You won't get that fixed in Bastien.
Ben looked at Annalene and raised an eyebrow. Annalene rolled her eyes.
My son,
the other hermit. She walked to the speeder truck and slapped the window frame.
How do you know that, Jabe? You haven't even seen it.
Jabe peeked out at them.
The supply shop in Bastien is closed. The Geeler's son is getting married. They'll be gone for a week.
Ben looked worriedly up at the suns and then down at the damaged unit. He swallowed.
A week, you say?
Or more,
Jabe said, vanishing back into the darkness of the back seat.
The wedding is on Naboo. They decided to make a vacation of it.
How wonderful for them,
Ben said, deflated. Callie grabbed at her mother's arm, nearly knocking her down.
Mom! Ben can come into Mos Eisley with us. Mos Eisley?
Ben's face froze. He looked to the east, his expression apprehensive.
I don't need to go to Mos Eisley.
Jabe's voice called out again.
Hear that? He doesn't need to go to Mos Eisley.
You hush, Annalene said. She looked back at the coolant pump.
You can get same-day service there, she said.
Ben waved his hands.
No, I'm sure you're on a supply run. You'll need room.
Callie bubbled with enthusiasm.
No, it's fine. We're not carrying anything.
You're not?
No.
Annalene's daughter found the document in her pocket and thrust it toward Ben.
Read this.
Without taking the slip from the girl's hand, Ben read aloud the hand-printed words.
To Annie, this certificate is good for a Soro Sub JG-8 luxury land speeder at Delroy Speeders of Mos Eisley. Ask for Gone. Sorry for all the trouble with your family speeder. Hope this makes up for it.
Ben paused before concluding.
Happy birthday. Love, Orin.
Ben looked back at Annalene, his eyebrow slightly raised.
He smiled gently. Does this mean...
I don't know. Orin's been like this lately.
How should I know what it means?
Callie clapped her hands elated.
I know what it means. It means I'm getting a new land speeder. Mom's old one, as soon as Glomer fixes it. Like blazes,
Jabe yelled out from the light van.
We haven't settled that.
Annalene shrugged.
We're still negotiating a distribution of assets.
Maybe they'll both get it.
Is that wise?
Ben asked. Oh, yes, Annalene said. This way, when they finally decide to run away from home, they'll get farther. Now come along with us.
No, really, that's not necessary.
Ben pointed to a pair of figures by a tower on a distant northern ridge. I'll just ask the folks whose land this is for help. Annalene squinted.
Don't bother, she said, recognizing them.
This is while Ulbricht's spread were on. After the Tuscans ripped him off yesterday, his sentries are probably chained to the Vaporators.
Anything to save the skinflint from joining the settlers' call, Jabe said from the van. He'll learn one day.
Annalene pointed at Ben with mock sternness.
And if you keep fighting serendipity, Master Kenobi, it's going to fight back.
Now come on, she said, walking back to the sledge. Let's get this unit into the truck.
Surrendering, Ben patted Rue's head.
Should we carry her with us?
A screech came from the vehicle's interior.
You're not putting that animal in my truck,
Jabe yelled.
You're,
Annalene sighed.
A minute ago you wanted my land speeder.
The light van went silent.
He's sulking,
she said to Ben.
But that's okay. I think our expectant mom will be happier at home.
She turned Rue west and gave her a pat on the behind. Promptly, the animal began loping off, retracing the sandy trail left by the sledge.
She'll find her way.
Ben looked after Rue, concerned.
You know, I really should go with her, to make sure she'll be all right.
Callie laughed.
I don't know what other trouble she could get into.
Don't worry, Annalene said, wiping her hands together.
She'll be home before the happy event, and you'll be living in a cool and comfortable house.
Resigned, Ben turned to help them lift the coolant unit.
I really do hate to prevail upon you to change your plans.
You're not changing these plans, Callie gushed. We're going to Mos Eisley!
Annalene smiled. Ben's reluctance was almost charming. The man, she suspected, simply didn't want to be in anyone's debt. She'd just have to convince him it wasn't a concern.
The clan has spoken, she said.
You'd better come along. Ben responded with a pained smile. The Shista Vanen had an evil-looking face, Oren thought. Nothing but fangs, pointy ears, and mud-colored hair. And yet, Tar Lup was as cheerful a being as he'd ever known. More cheerful still, standing behind the counter of Danar's claim in his neat city-bought jacket.
Thanks again for this chance, Master Galt,
Tar said, the natural growl in his voice somehow sounding amiable.
It's good to be in charge, even for a day. I don't get that in my regular job.
Standing atop a chair in the dining room, Oren lowered the holocam he was holding.
That's fine, Tar. Glad you could come back and help out.
Snapping the device off, he stepped down. He made sure he, too, was looking his best today, in the fineries Annalene had ordered from off-world. He needed to. Pausing in front of the substitute clerk, Oren looked down at the holo recorder in his hands.
Oh, this is part of another surprise for Annalene, he said.
Gonna get her some decent flooring in here for a change. Tar smiled toothily.
That's wonderful. I was always fond of the Calwells.
Me too, Oren said, stepping past Bomer at his table. The Rodian had picked a day when Annalene was out to make his return, but she wasn't missing much. Patched up, but heavily medicated, Bomer seemed even more catatonic than usual. Oren walked through the gap in the counter. Tar, I need to get back in there for another second, if you don't mind.
Certainly.
The Shista Vanen stepped out of the way.
That'll do it, Oren thought, taking another look at the electronic manifest behind the cash box.
He checked the chrono on the wall. He had everything he needed and plenty of time to get to his meetings. All was going according to plan. Both plans. Vika walked in from the parking area.
Ready when you are, Dad.
She walked to the bar and pulled her flask from her vest. Hopping onto the surface, she reached past the startled Tar to grab a bottle.
No, you don't, Orin said, before she could start filling. Not today.
Whatever. Irritated, Vika dropped the bottle, which landed back into place with a glassy clank. Orin passed her the holo recorder. Tar watched, puzzled, as father and daughter walked toward the exit.
Will you be back for lunch, sir?
No, I'll be out most of the day, he said, giving the store a last look. But, tell Annalene. I'll have something to talk to her about tonight.
Tar responded, but Orin didn't hear. He had things to do.
Chapter 29.
For the first half of Annalene's life, Mos Eisley had been no more than a concept. Her father had feared the place, and clerking gave her few opportunities to travel. But the city was always out there, a magnet drawing the starships she occasionally saw high overhead. It had inspired her young imagination. Images she had seen depicted Mos Eisley as a knotted web of crowded streets separating dusty domes used and decaying. She hadn't wanted to believe the pictures. Those vessels in the sky hailed from cosmopolitan places with shining spires. Why would they visit Tatooine at all if the city weren't something special? She'd looked forward to finding out for herself. When the day came, it was one that already ran high with expectations. Her wedding day. After the raucous send-off from their friends, Danar had surprised her by steering Orin's borrowed land speeder past Bastine and continuing east. As the kilometers sped by, the young bride's anticipation only grew. Spacecraft that soundlessly soared in the oasis sky, rumbled and gleamed here, all heading to or from the steaming mirage on the horizon. For a few wonderful minutes, Annalene had allowed herself to imagine that her surprise honeymoon included a trip on one of those starships. To the core worlds, perhaps, or better, to one of the wild places shown in the university safari brochure. Reaching the streets of Mos Eisley, which turned out to be as shabby and hectic as the pictures had shown, did nothing to still her hopes. Her sights were set higher. Danar had pulled the vehicle up to the Twin Shadows Inn, an acceptably clean, if far from posh, establishment off Kerner Plaza. The stay was the gift, all that a rural shop owner starting out could afford. But even with her stellar hopes dashed, Annalene soon realized that if she was looking for an exotic locale with strange creatures, Mos Eisley easily sufficed. Kerner Plaza was a relatively upscale neighborhood, with clean showrooms alongside outdoor bazaars. Located near the Republic Traveler's Aid office, the streets were safe enough to walk at twilight without blaster in hand. And Danar had even taken her to dinner at the Court of the Fountain, where she had marveled at every sight. Only a hut-owned establishment was rich enough to use water for decoration. Mos Eisley was a violent, congested mess, but it was also exciting and surprising. A doorway jammed half open to another dimension of adventure. If Mos Eisley wasn't the next best thing to going to the stars, it was still several steps closer than anything else on Tatooine. To this day, Annalene remembered every moment of the trip. She and Danar had never made it back to Mos Eisley together. Some store emergency always interfered. But Annalene had returned several times since Danar's death, usually alone, but once with each child individually. She and Danar had always talked of bringing the whole family here at some point, but the chance had never come. Now, she walked the streets of the city with both children at once, and for the first time, with a new companion. Ben walked behind the group, his cowl pulled low over his head. He stepped quickly to keep up with the Calwells, saying little. They looked like any other family out on the town, only with a son unhappy to have his father along, and a father who wasn't too thrilled either. He could have waited at the repair shop, Jabe said as the group turned a corner.
It was going to be 5 hours, Callie said.
I wouldn't have minded, Ben said pleasantly. There was a chair there.
It had an engine manifold sitting on it, Annalene said, shaking her head. Jabe's annoyance at their hooded tag-along hadn't lessened since the testy ride-in from the desert. The boy started walking faster through the crowd, ahead of his mother and sister.
Slow down, Jabe, Annalene said. Stay with the group.
She looked back at Ben and smiled. You too. Ben gamely followed, but Annalene could tell wandering a busy city wasn't his first choice for a good time. Strange. He had seemed so well-traveled to her. Well, maybe she could change that. Turning the corner into Kerner Plaza, however, the foursome encountered a different form of traffic. Dozens of hammer-headed Ithorians thronged the open space, stomping their tree-trunk feet and jubilantly waving soundmakers and silver tassels. Within a second, the crowd of brown-skinned giants engulfed the human visitors.
I think we've wandered into a wedding, Ben yelled, straining to be heard over the din. They have a lot of them here, Annalene called back, smiling.
A leather-skinned Ithorian danced past on spindly legs. Spying Annalene, the long-necked creature grabbed her by the shoulders and spun with her into the festive crowd. Whirling, Annalene could see Jabe reaching for his blaster, and then Ben placing his hand on the boy's wrist. Callie was in the dance now, too, as was, Annalene saw, just about every poor pedestrian who had wandered past. The twirling slowed, long enough for her to see a panicked Ben in the arms of a tall, female Ithorian bedecked in garlands. The mother of the bride? Annalene didn't know. As they both spun, she could only tell that Ben definitely didn't want to dance, and that he just as surely had no choice, as the wave of partygoers surged again. Finally, the alien released her, centrifugal force whipping her away to the side of the street. She braced herself against a stone column, laughing between gasps for breath. A delighted Callie broke free next, followed by Ben. His hood down and hair mussed, he looked like a man who'd just finished a pod race. Reclaiming her hat, Annalene scanned the crowd for Jabe. She found him against the nearest building, leaning standoffishly and clearly prepared to pull his blaster on anyone who came near.
I thought you wanted to get out of the store to have fun, she said.
Not my idea of fun, her son said. His flustered look vanished a second later, however, as a procession of scantily clad Twi'lek women emerged from the building behind him, carrying trays of multicolored drinks. Well, we've found your idea of fun, Annalene thought. Another group of servers followed. Twi'lek males, their attire even more unsuited to the dangerous suns, brought silver platters with exotic foodstuffs for anyone and everyone.
This party is getting better all the time, Callie said, smiling. Can we stay here?
Annalene looked over at Ben. He looked gray. She couldn't imagine he wanted to stay in the festival a second longer. Looking at the building the servers had emerged from, though, she realized where she was. Serendipity, she thought, amused. Gesturing for the beleaguered Ben to wait for a moment, she took her children aside. You kids can have lunch down here. 1 hour, she said.
2,
Callie said.
3,
Jabe added, gawking at the women. 1.5 hours, Annalene said. She jabbed her finger against Jabe's sternum. You're on alert. We're not going to have another Mos Espa. If you leave Callie's sight for an instant or get near anything stronger than blue milk, she's going to call me. I'll be here in a flash, and you'll be in a world of hurt. She looked around at the crazed partiers.
And don't either of you get engaged to, well, anyone.
Callie laughed. Rolling his eyes, her brother nodded.
Where will you be?
He asked. Annalene looked back at Ben, standing out of earshot.
I have some questions that need answers, she said.
You kids have fun. Hat in hand, Orin walked down the steps from the branch office of the Argau Investment Trust. There wasn't any point in being dejected, as the official had said nothing he hadn't heard once a month for 3 years. Bankers annoyed Orin more than lawyers did. What to make of people who had so much money, they were willing to drop piles of it on others across the galaxy just because they had an idea? Even a good idea, Orin thought. But at least the banker had confirmed what he wanted to know. He removed the holocam from his satchel and tossed it into the open back seat of the USV-5. Mullen was there, snoring. Orin looked around. He didn't know where Vika had flitted. "Wake up," he said, slapping his sleeping son with his hat. By reflex, Mullen reached for his shoulder holster before recognizing his father.
"Well?"
"It's going according to plan. Plan one, anyway." Orin scanned the buildings across from the bank until he found what he was looking for. Locating the cantina, he found Vika, too, emerging with 3 scruffy-looking human spacers, all of whom looked quite unable to fly despite the noon hour. Seeing her father, she made her goodbyes. "She sure makes friends fast," Orin said, resigned.
"That's because she always buys,"
Mullen said, slipping into the front seat. Hands on his hips, Orin glared at Vika as she approached.
"Do you ever listen?"
"I'm fine,"
Vika said, knocking the hollow emitter out of the way and sliding into the back seat of the landspeeder. "I'll be ready." She seemed sober enough, Orin thought. Well, he couldn't worry about rehabilitating his family now. There'd be a chance for that after. He strapped on his blaster and climbed into the passenger seat. The engine started, and the landspeeder moved back into the crowded streets of Mos Eisley. "Set the windshield to opaque," he said. "I don't want to run into Annie today."
Chapter 30
Annalene found the cafe again easily. She and Danar had discovered it years earlier, just paces from the Twin Shadows Inn and up the street from the building from which the Twi'leks had emerged. Ben didn't resist when Annalene took him by the hand, leading him past the crowd and inside.
"Thank you,"
he said in the lobby, exhaling.
"I owe you a life debt."
"You sure hate crowds," she said, climbing the stairs to the upper level.
"When Ithorians dance, it's best to get off the floor."
The master of the house greeted them warmly. Annalene had always enjoyed Café Tatou, too, including it on her solo trips to the spaceport. The kindly old man led her to the awning-shaded balcony overlooking the plaza. Ben chose a chair at a table away from other diners. She sat across from Ben, ordered the lunch special for them both, and clasped her hands together, ready to study her subject. She had been waiting forever for another chance to talk to him alone. Now, she couldn't figure out which question to ask first, if Ben would let her. P shifted uncomfortably in his chair.
The clerk at the repair shop did say 5 hours, no?
5 hours, she said.
Take your hood off. You're in a civilized place now.
Ben complied.
I was worried when you didn't come back to the store, she said. It's been a long time. Ah, yes. I've been busy,
he said, raising his glass to drink.
With? Things.
Things, she said, unbelieving. It was amazing how the man could use something as small as a cup to hide behind. Seemingly sensing her frustration, he set the drink down and grinned.
You've seen the grounds of my palace. I'm still working through the junk that might be toxic.
Annalene nodded.
I was afraid we'd scared you off, with Callie snooping around, telling everyone your last name.
Most people have one, Ben said.
Why shouldn't I?
Annalene put her elbows on the table and leaned over toward him.
I was also worried that maybe Orin had scared you off,
she said in a quieter voice.
Oh, no.
Ben sat casually back in his chair, putting some distance between them.
I like Orin, and he seems to like you.
This week, Annalene said.
Usually that means he wants something.
The land speed is a nice gesture. Perhaps he's in earnest. Annalene sat up straight, regarding him skeptically. Really? Ben shifted again, tracing his finger around the circumference of his glass.
You know, I don't know much about these things, but sometimes people's attitudes can change over the years. They can get closer.
He smiled at her, awkwardly.
Uh-huh.
Annalene reached for her glass and drank. Now she was the one hiding her expression. Inwardly, she was amused to no end. She didn't know if Ben was trying to palm her off on Orin or not, but he had just revealed some truth. He might stop runaway dewbacks and talk to Tuskens, but Ben Kenobi was on completely foreign territory when it came to discussing matters of the heart. A rickety server droid approached from behind Ben, saving him from further embarrassment. Annalene recognized the mechanical.
Hi, Gigi.
The bipedal, violet-colored droid set down the food and bowed.
It is nice of you to remember, madam.
The droid was an ancient model. Its hands quivered slightly as it placed the plates before the couple.
Good appetite to you, patrons.
Annalene smiled as the electronic waiter rattled away. GGH served us when Dana and I were here on our honeymoon, she told Ben.
It was the first time a droid had ever brought me anything. I felt like the Queen of Alderaan.
Ben took fork in hand.
You could have a droid at the Oasis, I'm sure. The farmhands don't like to see them.
They take away jobs on the range.
Well, you seem kind to them,
he noted.
No reason not to be, she said.
Ben smiled and began to eat. All through lunch, Annalene felt like a tracker losing a trail. Ben still seemed to have that sadness hidden deep within. It came out whether he wanted it to or not. but every attempt to nudge him toward a personal revelation resulted in his nimble escape to another topic. She couldn't become cross with him. Even this verbal fencing had the same fun and easiness of their lunch the day of the pod races. Rather, she began to feel sorry for how much work he was putting in, changing subjects. Fine, she decided as she finished her dessert. If Ben was going to insist on being more interested in her life than in talking about his, well, she'd make the sacrifice. And Ben did seem willing to listen to her entire litany of worries about Callie and what future she might find. The livery wasn't yet drudgery for her, but there weren't many options beyond that. Would she really be happy married to some farmhand? And, of course, they talked about Jade. Annalene had kept closer watch on her son since the Tuscan massacre. The boy wasn't out of control, but for some reason, Jabe wanted her to think he was. Ben seemed to share her concern. When people show you signs, it's important to read them, he said. But mostly they talked about her childhood and animals, about her father and the failed ranch, about her hopes to study and how that direction had changed, and about the thing that above and beyond Tuscan raiders, Oren's antics, or even her children's upbringing occupied the most territory in her life. The claim. And Ben wasn't having any of her complaints about it. I know you love it. I've seen you. You enjoy holding court, being the center that holds it all together. Annalene laughed. You want the job? It's yours. Oh, no, Ben said, picking at his dessert. I've never been one for the politics of large rooms. He took another bite. Or smaller ones. Annalene smiled. Consider parties, he said. They've always struck me as big, uncontrolled experiments in social dynamics. It's as if you're stress-testing every relationship you have at once. You're having lots of parties out there on the Junland? Just me and the Eopi, assumed to be plural. And assorted eavesdroppers, Annalene said. If you don't mind my saying so, you don't seem cut out for the hermit life. Mouthful of cake, Ben stopped himself from laughing. We were talking about you. Right. Well, life at the store isn't what it's cracked up to be. Annalene looked at the frayed awning above and clenched her fists. Okay. If you really want to hear it, here goes. I'm listening. You see the claim as a place to come to, she said. To interact, to get away from the nothingness. Well, everyone else around the oasis sees it the same way. Everyone. They show up before the second sun is up in the morning, and then they never leave. I have noticed a certain resident status for some. For some? Annalene's hands shook on the table, rattling her dinnerware. Danar used to joke that the claim was the 10th largest city on Tatooine, when it was full. And I'm not sure that's far off. She looked down at her empty plate. I'm barely holding together my own family, and yet I'm keeping all these other people going too. I'm not just feeding and clothing my own, I've got everyone. Catching her breath, she looked up at him. He was still listening intently, but she was embarrassed all the same. Sorry, she said. Am I ranting? Ben spoke calmly, that stoic reserve in full evidence. A life that seems small on the outside can be limitless on the inside. Even a person living in the remotest place can be concerned about hundreds. Or the whole galaxy. Annalene stared at him, mesmerized. Who are you?
Crazy Ben, your son says.
He grinned.
I actually think I like the sound of...
Ben stopped suddenly. Annalene followed his gaze across the street and saw a human in a black uniform and hat standing beside a figure fully clad in white armor. A spacesuit of some kind.
What is that?
She asked. Ben slid back in his chair away from the balcony railing.
Well, I'm not sure,
he said, his voice lower and softer than it had been. He looked again out of the corner of his eye.
I would almost say it looks like a clone trooper. I've seen hollows of them.
He studied the figure for another second before looking away.
But the uniforms are slightly different.
Annalene watched the strange pair. They weren't looking at her, or even at the festival going on all around them. Instead, they were examining the building they were standing in front of.
That suit's gotta be awful in this heat, she said. I wonder why they're here.
I don't know,
Ben said, head down as he scraped his plate.
What are they doing now?
Spying the data pad in the hand of the hatted figure, Annalene recognized the behavior instantly.
They're taking inventory, she said. That used to be the Republic's aid station on Tatooine.
I don't know what it is now, given whatever has been going on out there.
What has been going on?
Ben asked.
You'd know more than I would. I've never left the planet,
she said. But if they're with this new order or whatever it is, maybe they're still figuring out what it is they own. Ben said. He glanced around, newly uneasy. Annalene checked her chrono.
I guess we'd better get down there ourselves and get back to the kids. You know what? I think we should wait a while.
Ben stretched and patted his stomach.
To go down to the street.
A little surprised, Annalee nodded.
Sure. More time to talk, I guess. And it's the strangest thing. I'm suddenly developing a chill.
Ben rubbed at his throat.
I hope I'm not coming down with something.
With that, he pulled his hood back over his head and sank lower in his seat. Annalene shook her head. Obfuscation Kenobi was back. Across town, Mullen signaled from his post near the round building.
Nothing yet,
Vika said, speaking into her comlink. In the passenger seat of the landspeeder, Orin shook his head.
They said docking bay 87.
For the third time that minute, he checked to see if his blaster was in his holster. He just felt more comfortable knowing it was there. Orin knew the docking bay wasn't where the second of his two Mos Eisley meetings was to take place. He had called the meeting. The other party would take every step to place him at a disadvantage. He knew he didn't need to be worried, given his plans, but still, he wanted Mullen and Vika nearby, checking things out. Whatever faults his children had, there wasn't much they couldn't handle if things came to a fight. He was mostly sure things wouldn't, but he still reached down to pat the handle of his blaster again.
You won't need that,
a voice said from behind him. Orin turned to see Bojo Bupa sitting in the back seat of the USV-5, pointing a blaster at him. He hadn't heard the Gossam get in, but now he saw the creature's Gamorrean companions taking station at either side of the vehicle, parting only to permit the entry of a character Orin had never met before.
Nice speeder,
the scaly-faced Klaatuinian said, taking the driver's seat. The bronze-skinned creature then burst into giggles.
I want one! I want one!
Orin looked at the alien, then back at Bupa with alarm.
Just drive, jerk,
the Gossam said, lowering his gun and stretching out in the cushy seat.
Our buddy Goat here has somewhere to be. And he'd better tell us what we want to hear.
Chapter 31.
Now, kids, Annalene said, you realize this will be my land speeder and not yours, right?
Just so we understand each other.
Huh?
Jabe said, sitting behind the controls. Equally spellbound, Callie ran her hand across the hood.
Oh, yeah. Sure, Mom.
Ben grinned at Annalene.
I think you're in trouble.
I have been, she said, for 17 years. Annalene looked around the Delroy Speeder showroom. There were models here she'd never seen, nor was she likely to, out in the desert. With its open cockpit and ornate steering vanes up front, the JG-8 seemed the least practical of all. She'd need to keep it in the garage to preserve its ruby color.
It's nice,
Ben said, examining the display nearby. The price was there at the bottom, listed with options and without. Both figures were in the tens of thousands of credits. He looked up at Annalene.
It's a generous gift, to be sure.
A gift, right, Callie said, rolling her eyes. If you can't win their hearts, buy them. It's the Galt way. She looked back at her mother, who was admiring the interior.
But it's the only way we'd ever get something like this.
Oh, I could afford to buy it myself, Annalene said. But I never would. Ben raised an eyebrow.
I didn't think a frontier merchant did so well.
Annalene smiled.
What, did you think the personal deliveries to new arrivals cut into the profits? I really don't. It's 20+ years of scrimping and saving, and avoiding whatever new thing Orin had for us to invest in.
She ran her hand along the rich fabric on the seats. But this is amazing. I didn't think anything like this existed.
It is amazing, isn't it?
Asked a husky voice. The dealer, a happy squat human in his 50s, patted the rear engine lovingly. He gestured to the back seat.
It's the extended model, ma'am, straight from Sullust. Extra room in the back for light cargo, or for your children.
The retailer looked at the teenagers fawning over the vehicle and then at Ben.
Congratulations, sir, on raising such a fine family.
Ben stammered.
Oh, no, these aren't as fine as you think.
Annalene finished. She grinned at his unease.
Breathe, Ben.
She turned to the dealer. But the land speeder looks wonderful, Garn. What happens next?
Master Galt authorized the contract yesterday afternoon, ma'am. She's all yours.
The seller passed her a pouch containing the vehicle's maintenance codes.
Be sure to tell Orin that Garn Delroy provided good service.
I will.
Annalene looked back to see that Callie was already in the passenger seat and that Jabe had started the engine.
I'd better go now, if I ever want to see it again.
Come on, Ben.
Ben followed her into the back seat. Annalene gasped as she sat down.
Have you ever ridden in anything as nice as this? It is nice, he said.
Jabe guided the vehicle out through the wide doorway and into the busy streets of Mos Eisley. The foot traffic was noisier than the land speeder by far.
Take it easy now,
Annalene warned her son, leaning forward to be heard.
No problem.
Jabe smiled broadly and gripped the control stick. And the land speeder rocketed ahead, accelerating at a sudden rate that pushed 3 Cowells and a Kenobi back into their luxuriously cushioned seats. Jabe guided the gleaming vehicle through the curved streets at a breakneck pace. The land speeder drew close to one building and then another, before whipping under the neck of a surprised Saurian Ronto. By the time the giant bolted, the JG-8 was careening down another street,
Stop! Stop!
A second after Annalene yelled her command, Jay punched the brake, and the world stopped moving outside. Driver and riders were tossed forward into the restraint webbing, which caught them like a mother catching a child. Annalene was less gentle with her own child.
Jabe! What were you thinking?
Sorry. I just touched it,
Jabe said, stroking the steering yoke admiringly.
Not as good on the turns as I'd like, but I bet Glomer could really soup it up.
Not going to happen, Annalene said, then seemed amused. She looked at her daughter. Both of you, switch into the back. The grown-ups are taking over. Callie opened her door and stepped out of the hovering vehicle, while Annalene stood in her seat, wondering where they'd wound up. They were in a bazaar in part of Mos Eisley she'd never been to before. Standing by her mother's side of the vehicle, Callie pointed off to the left.
Hey, is that the bazaars over there?
Annalene turned to look. It was a young couple, yes, but they were older than her recent houseguests.
Not the bazaars, she said, squinting.
But I do know them. Reclining in his seat, Ben smiled mildly.
Annalene knows everyone.
Yeah, the man came through once looking for parts for something, she said. That's Cleek Lars' son, Owen.
Ben's eyes widened and locked on the couple emerging from behind the fruit stand, a basket of purchases in the man's hands.
Sad story, the Larses,
Annalene said, only half noticing Ben's sudden move to adjust his boot. Across the road from the land speeder, the brown-haired woman with Owen Lars turned, and Annalene saw what she was carrying.
Hey, they've had a baby.
Callie started to wave to the couple.
Let's call them over.
At once, and quite free from Jabe's grasp, the land speeder's control stick slammed forward, causing the vehicle to hurtle ahead again. Callie twirled and fell to the sandy street, buffeted by the jet wash from the twin engines. Aboard, the unrestrained Annalene fell backward into Ben's arms. The boy grabbed the steering yoke in panic. The vehicle skirted over the top of a wheeled cart and ripped through an intersection, even as its young driver fought the controls.
It's stuck!
He yelled. Annalene scrambled across the center control and helped him pull back on the stick. All at once it gave way, and the acceleration died. The vehicle floated to a stop in front of an illegally parked starship, whose owner, fearing the arrival of authorities, ran for his loading ramp. She fell back into the back seat, out of breath. Ben seemed rattled and wary, but otherwise intact. She clutched at her son's sleeve.
Jabe, I told you to knock it off!
I didn't do it, Mom! It started on its own!
On its own?
Annalene felt as if an artery had ruptured in her head.
You nearly killed your sister!
Rising cautiously, Ben raised his hand.
No, no. I saw it, he said.
Jabe's telling the truth. I saw the control stick. It slipped forward on its own while you weren't looking. Both Calwells looked at Ben. Annalene looked incredulous. Jabe was absolutely stupefied.
Thanks, he said. I don't believe this,
Annalene railed.
Pricey land speeders don't just start driving.
Still, that's what I saw, Ben said.
Jabe saved us.
He bowed his head slightly to Jabe, who looked at him in wonder. Aggravated, Annalene shook her head.
I'm going to give that dealer a piece of my mind.
Ben put up his hand.
I don't think that's necessary.
Annalene glared at him.
What, you'll save us from wild animals and Tuskens, but not defective vehicles?
Ben was speechless. It was as harshly as Annalene had ever spoken to him, and she regretted it instantly. She sank back into the seat and tried to calm down. She looked out. They were in a neighborhood she'd never seen before.
Where are we?
Placing his hood back over his head, Ben scanned the area.
Nowhere near where we were, he said, with what almost seemed like satisfaction.
He was breathing easier now, Annalene saw, and it made her feel better. Until her comlink went off.
Jade tried to kill me!
The tinny voice shrieked.
It's all a dumb mistake, Annalene told her daughter over the comm. Stay where you are, Callie. We'll be back for you and...
Ben grabbed at her sleeve.
Annalene, he said, pointing out of his side of the vehicle. There.
She looked out to see a land speeder that resembled Orin's, being driven by a Klaatu-Inian. It parked near the Mos Eisley Inn, and Bojo Bupa emerged from the back. The other passenger door opened.
Orin!
Annalene rose in her seat and watched, spellbound, as across the way, two armed humans stepped up and frisked Orin. His holster was empty, she saw, and the man made no move to oppose the search. He looked grim.
That's the gossam from the store, Annalene said.
Jabe reached for his blaster.
They're mugging him!
No. Ben reached forward and touched the boy's shoulder firmly.
I don't think that's what's happening.
Then what is happening?
Annalene wondered as the human and alien toughs conducted Orin past the hotel and toward an alleyway. She looked at Ben.
Orin's not even supposed to be in town today.
Jabe started to move again, only to be stopped this time by Annalene.
Mom, they're taking him away! We've got to help him!
We don't know what's happening, Annalene said.
It could be business. It could be nothing,
she added, but she didn't believe it. She looked plaintively to Ben, who was already out of the vehicle. He walked to the driver's side and spoke quickly.
You took it, Callie, and return here. I'll see what I can find out.
You?
Jabe objected.
You're crazy. You don't even carry a blaster.
And if one is necessary,
Ben said sternly, that's more reason you shouldn't go. His expression softened.
Orin was one of the first people to welcome me here. If he needs help, I'll get it for him.
Reluctantly, Jabe agreed. Ben waved to Annalene.
See you soon.
Orin marched toward the durasteel doors of the townhouse. It was an unassuming place, a poor stone block house in the shadows of the Mos Eisley Inn, with a large dome to the left of the front entrance. It wasn't what he'd expected at all, and while he had an escort, there were no guards outside the building. It didn't make sense. Or maybe it did. Who'd be crazy enough to attack here? Bupa pointed him to the main entrance. Orin walked up the steps, ready for anything. He nearly fell back down them again when a black sensor orb jabbed out from an iris near the doorway. It spoke in Huttese and then again in Basic.
Identification and purpose.
Orin took a deep breath.
Orin Galt.
He looked at his hands and flexed his fingers.
I have important business to discuss with Jabba the Hutt.
Chapter 32.
Human sweat dripped onto finely carved ceramic tiles. Jabba's foyer was as richly appointed as the building's exterior was modest. Orin wasn't surprised. He'd heard Jabba kept a presence in Mos Eisley, apart from his mountain palace. The hut seemed to want to convey a benevolent, paternal presence to the locals. There was nothing benevolent about the place, though. This was where the guards were, Oren realized. Four Morgamorians stood here, two at either side of the door, large poleaxes in their hands. They looked bored. Bojo, Bupa, and Jork followed Oren in, blasters at their sides. As they marched Oren down a wide hallway, he again felt the empty space in his holster. Bupa had even taken his comlinks. Mullen and Vika had no idea where he was. The audience chamber loomed ahead, behind a rollaway blast door. A silvery bipedal droid emerged and scanned Oren's body, confirming that he was unarmed. Oren felt like everyone was watching. Why did they put people through this? Was this really necessary? The droid said in guttural tones,
"Jabba will see you now."
Great sons, Oren thought, pulse racing as he urged his feet to move. How did it come to this? He inhaled deeply and walked through the doors. In the center of the rotunda, atop the long wooden platform built for a hut's power sled, Oren beheld something else. In place of a sled, a small figure in a light green business suit huddled over a desk. The pink and brown creature punched numbers into a data pad. Credits of all colors sat stacked in orderly piles on the desktop. A squat safe droid wobbled on its wheels nearby, its maw open and ready to accept currency. Oren didn't recognize the desk worker's species. He had an almost simian face, his cheeks accented by two straight, finely coiffed tufts of quill-like whiskers. Large, studious black eyes remained fixed on the calculations before him as he entered each new figure with zeal. And like the Gamorreans at the gate, he paid no mind to the new arrival. Jork shoved Oren toward the center of the room. Behind, Oren saw three more Gamorreans along the room's perimeter. And Bupa, who placed Oren's comlinks and blaster on a small table. Oren looked up into the dome above the room. Slivers of light from vents cut high in the bowl filtered down through heavy wire mesh netting, suspended meters above the floor. The metal web made no sense architecturally. The only break in the pattern was at the focal point of the dome, where a square mass sat over the center of the room. Oren squinted. Was something up there? With a cautious last look at the guards, Oren removed his hat and spoke. "I'm here."
"Indeed you are."
The being at the desk looked up and smiled toothily.
"I like this human. Observant."
"They told me Jabba was here," Oren said, feeling some blood re-entering his limbs. "Either they were wrong or you've lost weight." The suited alien slapped the desk for emphasis.
"Observant and with a sense of humor."
He sat down his data pad and stood.
"Yes, I like this. I want to be in business with such a person. I do."
"But who are you?"
"Morsep Benid, your humble servant," the creature said, bowing.
He was a full head shorter than Oren.
"I manage Jabba's portfolio when he's not here."
Clutching at the brim of his hat, Oren shifted uncomfortably. "Bupa said this was Jabba's place, so I assumed..."
"His immensity is a busy creature,"
Mosep said, lifting a small tray of money. Like cleaning crumbs from a plate, he slid the credits into the safe droid's innards.
But Jabba knows the people of Mos Eisley feel better when he's around. So at this office, Jabba is always in. My cousin Lojog and